This is an iHeart podcast.
There was a GOP debate last night. Megyn Kelly moderated it. We'll talk to her about that. Congressman Andy Biggs gets us updated on all the horrible things going on in Congress. Carol Roth, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. December 7th, 1941. You, of course, remember that speech. You might not have been alive. I certainly wasn't, but everyone's seen that speech from FDR talking about Pearl Harbor. It is December 7th, and 82 years ago today, Pearl Harbor happened. And you know me, I could spend forever nerding out on Pearl Harbor with you right now. Sadly, there's way too much political stuff we need to get to. I just want to say, that was the beginning of a terrible conflict. I know, look, especially as a dude, World War II is a passion of mine. It's a passion for virtually every man above the age of 40. What are you going to do? We love it. It's the biggest worldwide event ever in history. It's the biggest event in human history, World War II. But it was something where hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their lives, hundreds of thousands of others mentally and physically were broken beyond repair. And it began 82 years ago today on a sleepy Sunday morning. And it is wild to think about how terrible some of it is and how wonderful other parts of it is, how terrible it is. How terrible is it to think that so many of these sailors lost their lives on a sleepy Sunday morning in Hawaii when we were at peace? It's one thing to die in war. When you think you're in your bed at night, in the morning, and then you wake up to hell, it's horrible. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to think about the battleships like the Arizona and others tied up at port so they can't move, they can't escape. All they can do is sit there and shoot back a little but watch the bombs drop. It's heartbreaking. It's terrible. It's wonderful at the same time to know that our aircraft carriers happen to be out at the ocean. They were out doing maneuvers at the time. No, I'm sorry. Look, I love internet conspiracy theories as much as you do, but no, they were out in the ocean. So we saved the most important ships. That's wonderful. It's wonderful to read the stories about the bravery that day. And there was so much bravery that day. Our sailors that day acquitted themselves well, to put it mildly. Many, many, many of them gave their lives valiantly like warriors, woke up on a sleepy Sunday and turned into lions like that. It is wonderful that the Japanese missed critical things, not just the aircraft carriers, like our oil supply over there, which they should have gotten. It's a horrible day. It's a wonderful day. But it is a day we should always remember. And we will always remember it here on this show. And that's also, let's tie it into today here. Let's also acknowledge how despicable the leaders are who lead us now when they compare a slightly spicy protest to that awful day.
Dates that occupy not only a place on our calendars, but a place in our collective memory. December 7th, 1941. September 11th, 2001, and January 6th, 2021.
Anyone who really knows the details of Pearl Harbor, no matter your political persuasion, hears those words and they're disgusted by the people who lead us now. I think about stories of sailors after their ship's been bombed, coming out burned with their skin hanging off, jumping into the ocean to try to put the flames out, only to jump into a gigantic vat of oil which had leaked into the ocean. And to know that our politicians today, Dome, Biden, Jeffries, all of them, regularly compare that to January 6th, boy, that really brings it home how broken our current political system is, huh? Anyway, people were trying to change it. Megyn Kelly hosted a GOP debate last night, had some very hard questions for all of the candidates, threw this bomb out to Ron DeSantis.
Governor DeSantis, your campaign and its super PAC have spent the most money,
had the most high net worth donors and had a wave of momentum coming into this race after your big re-election win in Florida. You were seen by many as the candidate most likely to consolidate the non-Trump field. But here we are, a month out from the first real votes, and you haven't managed to do it. In fact, Nikki Haley is beating you in New Hampshire and South Carolina now, and closing in on you in Iowa, not to mention Trump, who is not only dominating in the early states, but is beating you in Florida by over 30 points. Is it fair to say, as Senator Tim Scott did when he dropped out, that voters are telling you, not no, but not now?
So we have a great idea in America that the voters actually make these decisions, not pundits or pollsters. I'm sick of hearing about these polls.
Joining me now, the great Megyn Kelly, journalist, host of The Megyn Kelly Show, which of course you can watch on SiriusXM or consume on SiriusXM Triumph Channel 111, youtube.com/Megyn Kelly. Megyn, okay, there you were. Back there moderating a debate, asking hard questions of candidates again. Did it feel good?
Yes, it felt so good. Yes, because I think it's probably, I'm not a sports person, but I think it probably feels the way a sports person feels, an athlete, when he's been sidelined from an injury or she's been sidelined and you watch all the other players and you're like, oh, I kind of want to be out there. And if, then you get back in. You're like, yes, okay, good. I know exactly how to do this. I want to do it my way. And I really thought, like, the whole thing was spectacular because the candidates showed up ready to play. And if they hadn't, if they didn't bring it, it would have been a lame debate. I mean, we had the cattle prod, basically, with those tough questions. But in the end, it's up to the candidates to make it good or not. And they came. It was great.
They did. What did you think of the DeSantis answer to that? That was quite a question to lob at him right off the bat. Hey, you're getting crushed. What say you? How do you think he handled it?
I know. I thought it was fine. You know, I mean, what else can you say? You either have to say, you basically have to say the polls don't matter. You know, like the poll, you can't believe the polls. Don't believe the polls. The polls said we were going to win in 2022 and we didn't. That's what they all say when the polls are against them. So there's not really a great answer to it. This is why I chose the question. You know, I wrote electability questions for all of them, Jesse. Nikki Haley, for me, it was either you're a war hawk, you're too tied to the banks and the billionaires, or you're a political opportunist because you flip-flopped so many times on Trump. And in the end, you saw the one I went for. Vivek, to me, it was obvious which one to do with him. Christie, very obvious. And DeSantis was, what is it? What is it about DeSantis that isn't resonating? What is it? And I can't put it into words. For me, I think he's not a natural retail politician, and yet he's probably the most competent guy we could put in there. And I think the more time he's out there, the better he gets on the campaign trail. We saw that last night. You know, he may be peaking too late in the cycle. So in the end, I went with whatever it is. I don't know if it's your crappy internal fighting of your campaign and your super PAC and all. I don't really care. All I know is you had all the advantages and you didn't make the most of them because you're not where everybody thought you would be. And it put him in a tough spot, and he handled it probably the best one could.
Yeah, I find that to be interesting. I'm glad you brought this up. I don't know, we probably should get to other things, but I'm interested in this. He is, look, resume-wise, there's no debate. I mean, you look at Ron DeSantis, the Ron DeSantis resume is, you can't even assault it. It's perfection. And yet, the average American GOP primary voter, about half of them prefer Donald Trump over DeSantis. Is it just a personality thing? Is it the political persecution of Trump, which is admittedly evil and horrible? Is that what you think it is?
I think it's all of that. And I just think Trump has come to represent, you know, the critics would say it's a cult. I think it's not a cult, but he represents, like, the, you know, we've said it before, the breaking ball of the deep state, of all the things that have been crushing the lives of the working class GOP or GOP adjacent members for years. And they trust him. He came in. He's the big middle finger wrecking ball guy. And there's a relationship with him. And he's extremely dynamic. And he's funny. And he's a celebrity. He's a star. And it's kind of what would happen in the Democratic Party if George Clooney ran. You know, they fall in love with a different kind of leader. Republicans like their leaders kind of rough and tumble and closer to the middle finger. So it's going to be very hard to tear that base away from Trump. That's what all of them last night are up against. No one's been able to come close.
One person who I think is most definitely not going to come close, no matter how much fluff is out there, is Nikki Haley. As you pointed out earlier, a bunch of knives were out for her last night. Here's a little clip.
The only person more fascist than the Biden regime now is Nikki Haley, who thinks the government should identify every one of those individuals with an ID. One thing that Joe Biden and Nikki Haley have in common is that neither of them could even state for you three provinces in eastern Ukraine that they want to send our troops to actually fight for. Look at that. This is what I want people to understand. These people have, I mean, she has no idea what the hell the names of those provinces are, but she wants to send our sons and daughters and our troops and our military equipment to go fight it.
I signed legislation in Florida banning the mutilation of minors because it is wrong. We cannot allow this to happen in this country. And I know Chris disagrees with me, and I think he has an honest position. Nikki disagrees with me. She opposes the bill that we did to ban that. She said the law shouldn't get involved with it. You said the law shouldn't get involved with it. She also, though, I think, and this is flows from what she did as governor of South Carolina, you know, they had a bill to try to say that men shouldn't go into girls' bathrooms. And she killed that bill, and she bragged that she killed that bill.
Megan, okay, setting aside the substance of everything they just said there, which is fine, all that stuff's fine. Why so many knives out for Nikki Haley? She's third place. I don't know if you're seeing this race different than I am. Third place at best with no shot at the nomination, yet she was the focal point of a lot of ire last night. Why?
Well, because they're all competing to be number one in the undercard, right? First alternate to Trump. If Trump implodes, here I am. Look how pretty. Look at me. Remember when you fell in love with me at the debates? That's kind of what they're competing for. And right now, it's pretty much between DeSantis and Haley. I mean, it is between DeSantis and Haley. Vivek and Christie are way behind. Vivek had sort of a boomlet after the first debate and then kind of fell apart. He's been down around 3% since then, you know, net. And so I think it's between these two. DeSantis finally learned that it's important to fight your rival, and that if he didn't try to punch Nikki, she was going to keep punching him or punching others and rising above him. He was crushing her in Iowa. Now she's within 3 points of him there. And that's his state. He did the full 99, as they call it, all the counties. He's invested tons of money and time and worker hours there. He needs to come close to Trump in Iowa, or at least crush everybody else in the field. So she's leading in North Carolina. She's leading in South Carolina, and she's leading in New Hampshire. And she is within 3 points of him in Iowa. So he does have to attack her, and he can't leave it all to Vivek Ramaswamy. He's got to show viewers with like a more voice of authority, which I think he has versus Vivek. No, there are serious problems with her. Slow your roll.
Yeah. Megan, you are the best. We will talk again soon, I am sure. Give my best to your husband and his wonderful book. I had him on the other day. He was awesome. I appreciate you. Megan Kelly. All right. Let's talk about something Ron DeSantis said last night, speaking of Ron DeSantis. Before we get to Ron, let's do this. Let's talk about an attorney. No. Look, I feel the same way about lawyers you do, but we all need one now. It is sad that that's where we are, but we live in a country where we need one now. Normal people do. Not just big shots and millionaires and billionaires. Big shots need an attorney now. That's what Attorneys for Freedom is all about. It's attorney representation for normal people. Don't buy the concealed carry insurance. Well, they'll pay for my lawyer. That's a scam. Call Attorneys for Freedom. You having legal representation on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Attorneysonretainer.us, promo code Jesse, gets you a discount on that. So go and get a lawyer. We'll be back. Why do our parents punish us? It kind of sucks, right? Look, I'm a dad. I punish my sons when they screw up. And I'll be honest with you, full disclosure, I hope they're not watching right now. I hate it. I had to bust one of my sons the other day. I was going to ground him when I got home and chew him out for something he had done wrong. And I knew I was going to that morning. And all day long, it just sat and ate at me that I had to do it. I hated it. But I did it. Now, why? Why? Well, punishment is not about hatred. Or even really about anger, and oftentimes it shouldn't be. Punishment is about correcting bad behaviors so those bad behaviors don't happen again. When you issue correction, however you choose to do it with your children, when you give correction for bad behavior, the next time they consider that bad behavior, they have that thing you did last time in their head. Oh, I don't want to get grounded again. And so it dissuades them. That's not just for children. That's how human beings work. I work that way. You work that way. We respond to stimulus, rewards, and punishment. Carrot and stick. I'm never going to let the COVID lockdowns go. I'm not. And I'm not going to let go my desire, the desire I've told you about for the longest time, that we have some sort of a reckoning. We must have a reckoning. And you can call it vengeance, that's fine. I'm not going to lie to you. I do want vengeance. There's no question about that. But for the good of the country, for the sake of Western society, we must have people put on trial. People must go to prison for this. They must. People have to lose their livelihoods. They have to lose everything because they took everything away from others. They must watch their colleagues lose everything over lies so they don't tell those same lies again another time. There must be a reckoning. It must happen. It must be severe, and it must be public. It must be. And I will tell you, it did my heart well last night. I didn't do a bunch of the GOP debate. I watched it, but I was half invested in it, just kind of browsing to see if I heard anything I liked. I liked it when I heard this.
We need a reckoning for what this government did during COVID-19. That includes the mRNA shots. So I'm going to go in there, CDC, NIH, FDA. We're going to clean house. There's going to be a reckoning because right now nobody's been held accountable for any of the damage. And they're going to try to do it again. When I'm president, this will never happen to our country ever again.
Thank you.
I like it. Let's hope more people start speaking that way. Now, why? Am I just a vengeful person? Spiteful? Well, yeah, but that's not why. That's not the reason why. You know, just pause. Remember back, do you remember the masks? The masks. Masking everywhere. Your kid wearing masks in schools, we'll get to that in a minute. Masks in the grocery store, masks on the plane, masks at work, masks here. It's hot on your face. You remember the masks? The masking everywhere? Well, you know that the mask not only never did a thing to help you, right? It actually hurt you. We now have people, microplastics filling up their lungs. We have study after study now who prove not only were the masks ineffective, that would be the best case scenario, the masks actually did more harm than good. All that required masking, it was all false science, false medicine. The mask never did a thing. And yet, as I sit here talking to you tonight, 31 states, that's the majority of U.S. states, 31 states still recommend face masks. And look, I'm in the red state of Texas. To this day, you can walk in a doctor's office, a pediatrician's office, a dentist, now none of the ones I go to, and see signs on the door, face masks required. This is part of why we need a reckoning. Unless these people are punished for pushing faulty, harmful science on an entire nation, they will never reform. They will never change their ways. To say nothing about all the monsters that came out here because of COVID. Do you remember this subhuman demon doing this to this child?
Put the mask on. Yeah. No, you gotta wear it on, honey.
Put your mask on.
There you go.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's very, very bad. That woman needs to go to prison. Lots of people have to go to prison. You remember what Randy Weingarten was saying throughout the pandemic?
Remote and hybrid are really the only two ways you can reopen schools safely.
You got to delay school opening because if you don't have the masks, how are you going to be able to do this? There's a huge difference between working in Walmart and working in a school.
Full-time is going to depend upon what's going on with physical distancing and what's going on with the variants.
And I just hope this is not a rush to put in twice as many deaths in a place where we're really starting to get things reopened.
I'm surprised to hear you think that this is a rush.
We need to, you know, bring back our masks for schools.
Now she's out there saying today, worldwide, the extraordinary drop in math and reading scores shows how detrimental the COVID-19 pandemic and its aftermath was to student learning and highlights. Why? How could anybody have that level of gall? How's it humanly possible? Randy Weingarten has that level of gall because she's not sitting in jail awaiting her public trial that will send her to prison for the rest of her life. All the most despicable people, the most evil tyrants, they all are still out there running their fat mouths because they have not been punished. Punishment is not about vengeance. It's about justice. And it's about protecting the American people from future horrors. You know it's cold and flu season again, right? You know they're going to bring back all the stupid mask mandates. They're going to use this to push endless amounts of vax stuff to enrich big pharma because there's never been a reckoning. And that's a problem. All right. That also may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of COVID, the economy is still blown up from it and will be for quite some time. Let's have a talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, let's talk about, well, that was a lot of health, right? Oh, I personally have fallen in love with natural herbal supplements now. I just do. I don't trust Big Pharma anymore. I want natural things, including for my dog. I want natural solutions for my dog's health problems. I want my dog to live longer. I don't want him to have digestive issues. I don't want him to have bad breath, a dull coat. I want natural solutions for that. So where do I go? I go to Rough Greens. Rough Greens is an all-natural nutritional supplement created by naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black. You pour it on your dog's food. Your dog will be healthier. Your dog will live longer. Free Jumpstart trial bags. Start your dog on it. You'll see a difference in your dog. 833-33-MY-DOG. Or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
When it comes to people like Jamie Dimon and others, I'm thrilled that they want to support us. We'll take all the support we can.
That is interesting. You know what else is interesting about this? Oh, well, I can't wait to talk to Carol about this. Jamie Dimon. Obviously, Jamie Dimon is a name most people know well. If you watch this show, you know it well. But Jamie Dimon, I feel like he was involved in the announcement. He was going to be involved in building up Ukraine after the Russia-Ukraine thing was over. Huh. Anyway, I wonder what Carol thinks about all that. Joining me now, the great Carol Roth, author of now multiple wonderful books. Her latest one is You Will Own Nothing. That is the one that sits on my son's nightstand. He loves that friggin' book so much. It's awesome. Carol, Jamie Dimon. Man, his name sure does come up a lot when we discuss these major things.
Yeah, Jamie Dimon is OG. A funny story. At one point in time, I had him on a list to be my third husband, not the second one. I didn't have a second one identified. But over time, I realized he was going to be too old by the time that all happened. But anyway, I digressed. You know, he is an OG in the business arena. And anytime something comes up, he is sort of firmly inserted himself in the middle of things. I will say, of all of the elitists, he probably has the firmest grasp on reality, but obviously he's got a lot of skin in the game. So every time that he speaks, there is, some specific incentive that he's driving.
Carol, okay, help me understand why Wall Street would pick a certain candidate over another. You're, as you call yourself, a recovering investment banker. It's very obvious. They're kind of sour on Joe. Apparently, they looked at the other candidates in the field, the Trump, DeSantis, the whatever types, and they didn't like what they saw, but they really like what they see in Nikki Haley. Why?
So this is a very interesting question, one that maybe 10 years ago would have had a very clear and obvious answer. But when you look at who the Wall Street candidate was the last time around, who the candidate that everybody gave their money to, it was none other than Joe Biden. And we saw how that turned out for the economy and, frankly, for a lot of the different players on Wall Street, even though stocks have been up this past year. Usually you want somebody who is pro-business, at least big business, pro-cronyism, friendly to the interests of growing the economy and making the rich richer. So maybe he did a little bit of that in the beginning, but it had a very unhappy ending, as we all knew it would. And I don't think that's the way Wall Street would want it to go about. So if this were a normal world, you would say Wall Street is backing the candidate that they think is going to scratch their backs and be good for big business. But given the fact that they backed Joe Biden last time around, all bets are off the table. We no longer live in a normal world, Jesse.
No, we certainly do not. Speaking of abnormal, crypto. Anyway, Jamie Dimon had this to say about crypto.
I've always been deeply opposed to crypto, Bitcoin, etc. You pointed out the only true use case for it is criminals, drug traffickers, anti-money laundering, tax avoidance, and that is a use case because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously, and because it doesn't go through, as you mentioned, all these systems have been built up over many years, know your customer, sanctions, OFAC, they can get bypass all of that. If I was the government, I'd close it down.
Okay.
Okay, Carol, I am not a crypto guy. I don't have anything against it. I have many friends who are. I'm just 42 going on 82, and I don't understand it. But Jamie Dimon being against it tells me maybe it's something I should show more interest in.
Yeah, it's really shocking, Jess, completely shocking that somebody who benefits from fiat currency, monetary policy, and being in that power circle who controls our money supply wouldn't want to give up that power. Isn't that a complete shock to everyone? And that's always been the pushback against crypto, from the top, and why, frankly, a central bank digital currency is something that has been on the radar, because those with the power to control the money supply don't want to give that up, and Bitcoin is a direct threat. I am not really a Bitcoin person either. I tend to be more of a physical precious metals, gold and silver kind of gal myself. But for him to say that the only use case is for criminals is ridiculous. The reason why many people have bought into Bitcoin, both literally and figuratively, is because they don't like what has happened to the manipulation of our currency. We have seen the currency debased significantly. Obviously, we're all feeling the effects of the inflation that has happened based on the monetary policy. And that's why people are concerned with that in the U.S.'s financial position, that they want to have an alternative. Now, again, you have different options for alternatives, and I'm old school, so I pick a different one. And as somebody who is pro-Bitcoin will be able to give you the reasons why you might think that's a good one to pick as your alternative. But for him to say that it's only for criminals is purely just him protecting his domain and terrain.
Carol, a report came out, said the average person now needs $11,400 more than they needed before to afford the basics. You and I have had this conversation a million times. The average person watching their standard of living go down and down and down. Are they making adjustments with their consumer spending? Because as you have pointed out to us many times, that's what drives our economy, consumer spending.
Yes, this is something that you and I both predicted. I had said $10,000 a year. It was even more than the prediction. What has happened with the consumer, as we talked about and as you noted, the consumer is about 70% of the economy. And so what the consumer does best is spend. And so this $11,400 is them having to spend more on the things that are their basic day-to-day, and they just keep going into their own balance sheet in order to be able to pay for that. That means the personal saving rate has come down. It's now sitting at about 3.8%. It was over, I think it was 4.4% to start the year. We know that debt rates, the amount of debt, not the rate of debt, but the amount of debt has gone through the roof. That is at all-time high. Credit card debt is around $1.1 trillion. There are a lot of people using alternatives like buy now, pay later as a form of deferring the payment. And so they're really trying to keep up with their previous standard of living, having to spend more, but not necessarily having that same amount of cash in the bank. So they're going to continue to do that probably as long as their job remains. What we're seeing, though, is a shift of the job openings. I think it was about a year and a half ago, you and I talked about there was almost 2 job openings available for every job seeker. Now we're down to about 1.3. And so that's really shrinking up. And as the job market, potentially changes around and people are worried about their job, and hopefully it's not even a case of losing it, but just more concerned about it, that may be a trigger for them to pull back. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of analysts projecting that we could end up in a recession at some point next year.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Carol, on that note, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you very much. All right. You know what sucks? This whole FISA warrant situation where they get to spy on us all the time, the federal government. Is the GOP really about to go ahead and give them permission to keep doing that? Let's talk to Congressman Andy Biggs about that next. I think I already know the answer. I'm worried I already know the answer, but let's ask the congressman about it in a moment. Before we do that, let's do this. I hate scammers. I really, really, really despise scam artists. I have a real hatred for timeshare companies. Not that I have anything against timeshares, mind you. They can be wonderful. But these companies, the kind of business most of them run, they get people in. They get people signed up. You know, you'll go enjoy your timeshare for a while, and then people eventually get tired of it. They don't want it anymore. It's a second place, too much of a headache, and they try to get out, and the timeshare company tells you you're locked in for life. Sorry, you got to pay your annual fees forever. Special assessments. That's a lie. That's a dirty lie. Lone Star Transfer has helped over 18,000 timeshare owners legally and permanently get out. They are successful 99% of the time. You are one phone call from getting out of your timeshare, so make the phone call. Stop paying those stupid annual fees. 844-310-2646. Call them today. We'll be back.
I want to emphasize the importance of one tool in particular that is indispensable to our efforts to combat threats posed by foreign adversaries, one that will expire in just a few short weeks if Congress does not act, and that is FISA's 702 authorities for the FBI. And the expiration of our 702 authorities would be devastating to the FBI's ability to protect Americans from those threats. Stripping the FBI of its 702 authorities would be a form of unilateral disarmament.
Man, that sounds pretty scary. Gosh, we better continue to give them all the authority in the world. You know what? Let's ask the congressman to even explain what the heck he's talking about. Joining me now, great congressman from Arizona, Congressman Andy Biggs. Okay, Andy, what's he talking about? What's this 702 authority? Is that a highway or something? What is it?
Section 702 is part of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it gives authority to the federal police and surveillance apparatus, think about this, to actually surveil foreign people in foreign countries. And nobody's talking about that. If you want to surveil people and have access to their data, communications data of a foreign person in a foreign country, have at it. But what they've done, though, is they've abused that same authority, because when you do that, inevitably you're going to catch up a U.S. citizen. Somebody, they talk to somebody, they're in a database on a cell phone, maybe they send an email or a text message or something, and they're a U.S. citizen. Well, what they don't bother to tell you is, we want you to have a warrant. Why? Because the FBI has done this literally millions of times, accessed U.S. persons' communications data that they have seen in this foreign database, whatever foreign database of some foreign person as a target. And they've done that millions of times, that the Inspector General has said, guess what? You guys have engaged in improper queries, which is another way of saying illegal searches.
Congressman, what have they done with this information? Millions of times they have, I would say illegally, obtained private information, maybe mine, maybe yours. What have they been doing with this information they've been gathering on American citizens? Is J. Edgar Hoover still running things over there?
He might as well be. In fact, he would have loved this program, because what the Inspector General's reported, and there's some independent watchdog groups that were set up at the time as well. What they've reported is that there's been sometimes a parallel use of that information. So it's kind of a backdoor search. So they find you and they say, oh, we think this guy might be a criminal. So they're looking at you without that warrant, and they look to see if they can build a criminal case, and then they see if they can build it up with non-702 data and information and evidence, so nobody will ever even know ostensibly that they use that 702 evidence as the predicate to go after you. And so we've got people here in Congress that are saying, oh, Andy, we're gonna have a problem. We're not telling you that you can't continue to target a foreign person on foreign soil, and that you can build these databases. We're just saying, once you start going down the rabbit hole on U.S. persons, guess what? You got to have a Fourth Amendment search warrant.
Congressman, how many of your colleagues in Congress are with you on your very correct way of thinking? Please tell me there are some Democrats, although I'm not hopeful on that, but at least Republicans, tell me they're at least universal in acknowledging the FBI is after them now.
So the Democrats, I think we actually have the majority of the Democrats agree with me and are going to support my bill if we can get it voted on the floor. I do think ultimately we have a chance to get the majority of the Republicans, but they're not universally with me. Jesse, what they're doing instead, actually, there's a cadre, the Intelligence Committee right now in the Congress. Republicans are trying to send scaring messages to my colleagues. Everything from if the Biggs bill passes, we'll be protecting illegal immigrants, to this is going to result in a terrorist attack that we won't be able to detect because we can't get this information. And the problem is it's not even accurate. I mean, my bill actually, Jesse, it kind of mirrors normal Fourth Amendment law, which says basically you got to get a warrant. But if there's some kind of exigent circumstance and you suspect or have a legitimate reason to believe that somebody is in immediate peril, you can go ahead and make that search until things calm down. But then you're going to have to justify that, right? But it's got to be transparent. The problem with this, Jesse, is it all takes place in a secret court. A secret court that you have to hope that somebody is going to report on and give us information. So for years, people didn't know, they suspected, but they didn't know until the Inspector General for the Department of Justice said, hey, big problems here, a lot of problems going on. And no, we do not have universal Republican support. It is frustrating to me, and the speaker is actually undermining us a bit as well.
Ugh, what a bunch of friggin' weenies. Congressman, how many Americans do you think even know what cultural Marxism is, and how many Americans do you think know they're surrounded by it? Like, what percentage do you think?
I would say in mainstream and conservative circles, less than 1%, less than 1/10, maybe even less than 1/100th of a percent know about cultural Marxism. If you're a lefty, because it stems from, as you rightly noted the other night, Antonio Gramsci, who was an Italian Marxist who ended up in prison, and he wrote his philosophy while in prison. What he said is, because you're not going to be able to get the proletariat or the middle class ever to rally to get this type of thing done, which is a revolution, an overthrow of capitalism and free markets, what you're going to have to do is you're going to basically have to take control of every institution, whether it's education, religion, government bureaucracy, and use those to have a different kind of revolution. And guess what? We're there. That's the existential crisis that we face. And that's why every institution right now is designed and filled with people who hate this country and want to overthrow who we are as an American society. And guess what? This, back to the 702, that's more of the same, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I wish more people spoke like this. Thank you, Congressman. I appreciate it very much. Well, there's that. Now you know why I call them the low-T GOP. Of course they're working to undermine the good people who are trying to stop what the FBI is doing. Whole GOP needs on a male vitality stack. I've said it many times, and it's 100% true. The average American, their T levels are down 50% in the last 50 years. That's because there are estrogens in our water, by the way. They're in the plastics, they're in the water we shower in them. It's really, really bad. So we have to take steps to counteract that, fellas. Take a male vitality stack, natural herbal supplements from Chalk every day. But the average GOP representative, his are down 100%. So maybe he should double his male vitality stack. I don't know. I would have to reach out to Chalk and find out. I do know this. I feel like $1 million all the time now. Start it. Give it 90 days. You don't have to take my word for it. You will feel so much better. Just trust me on that. Christmas sale time at Chalk. Code is JesseTV. You have to go to chalk.com, code JesseTV. Go get some. We'll be back. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I love this one. I love this one. So it's this kid named Xavier, and he decided he wants to be fast, really fast. Fastest human being on Earth. And he's choosing to make it happen. What's he doing? He's racing the school bus every day to the cheers of his classmates.
Ready, Xavier? Look at me. Give me a thumbs up. All right. Let's see how fast you are.
That's as good as it gets. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.